News. I'm Tommy McNeil. South Korea says that it is removing Japan from a list of trusted trade partners to a new category that brings more restrictions on exports of sensitive goods. The move is the latest in a back-and-forth trade dispute between the two countries, which has included Japan dropping South Korea from its own list of preferred trading partners. South Korea's trade ministers say that the new category was for countries that have managed their export controls in a way that violates international norms. New Trump administration rules are taking effect that might make it more difficult for some immigrants to become American citizens. We get more from AP correspondent Sagar Magani.
Federal law already requires immigrants seeking green cards and legal status to prove they will not be a burden to the nation. The new rules kicking in today detail just what could disqualify them. They could deny green cards to those who use Medicaid, food stamps, or other forms of public assistance. Citizenship and immigration officers will weigh those factors along with things like education and income in deciding who gets legal status. It's one of the administration's most aggressive efforts to restrict legal immigration and is part of a push to focus on immigrant skills. Sagar Magani, Washington.
A key U.S. lawmaker is warning China against harsh reprisals on pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong, thousands of whom occupied the territory's international airport Monday. It forced the cancellation of all flights. Senate Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said on Twitter, "The people of Hong Kong are bravely standing up to the Chinese Communist Party as Beijing tries to encroach on their autonomy and freedom. Any violent crackdown will be completely unacceptable." China on Monday termed the protest terrorism. This is VOA News. The Trump administration officials are defending last week's mass immigration raids in Mississippi, including emotional footage of a girl pleading with authorities to let her father go. Acting Customs and Border Protection Commissioner Mark Morgan acknowledged that the video of the 11-year-old sobbing was emotional, but says the girl was quickly reunited with her mother. In response, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she's against the policy of breaking up immigrant families.
For them to invade a workplace, divide families, just really undermines the character of America. What the motivation for it is, I'll leave to others to decide.
The suspect in Norway's mosque shooting has appeared in court. AP correspondent Charles de la Desma.
The head of Norway's domestic security agency says officials had received a vague tip a year ago about the suspected gunman in Saturday's Oslo mosque shooting, but it was not sufficient to act on as there weren't any concrete plans of attack. Consequently, the official says he didn't see any reason to change the overall threat assessment for Norway. The suspect, Philip Manshaus, is accused of an attempted terrorist attack on the mosque and separately killing his teenage stepsister. In court, he looked bruised and scratched, but smiling. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
U.S. authorities said Monday that a friend of the Dayton, Ohio gunman who killed 9 people in 30-second burst of mayhem bought him body armor, a gun accessory, and a 100-round magazine earlier this year. Prosecutors in the Midwest city said that Ethan Colley told authorities that he bought the items for the shooter, Connor Betts, and kept them at his apartment so the shooter's parents would not find the gear. Gun owners in New Zealand turned in more than 10,000 firearms in a buyback program established after the country's worst mass shooting in modern history. New Zealand banned most automatic and semi-automatic weapons after a gunman shot and killed 51 people and wounded scores more at two Christchurch mosques in March. The buyback program continues until December 20th. Rescue operations continue in 4 Indian states where monsoon floods have killed nearly 200 people and forced more than 1 million from their homes. The western and southern states have been inundated by heavy rains and flooded rivers. The southern state of Kerala, a tourist haven known for its beaches and resorts, has been the worst hit region. The death toll there reached 76 Monday, while 116 people were reportedly killed in other 3 states. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawian protesters threaten to shut down the country's air and land borders if President Mutharika does not fire the Electoral Commission chair.
The president is there to represent Malawi because we have issues in Malawi, and the president should be concerned in terms of what is going on in the country. And that's what we are calling him to address the situation in the country.
Tanzania holds mass burials as death toll in weekend fuel tanker explosion reaches 75. South Sudan activists want more women in leadership position. And Nigeria's Shiite Muslims suspend protest now that their ailing leader has been airlifted for treatment in India.
We are so delighted that it has been done at last. We have been agitating for this for the past 2 years, but it was not granted. But at the end of the day, it has been granted, so we are delighted.
Ibrahim Gamawa is the spokesperson for the Islamic Movement of Nigeria, and tensions mount in Guinea as speculations grow that President Alpha Condé might seek a third term. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi Human Rights Defenders Coalition has threatened to shut down the country's only international airport and borders if President Arthur Peter Mutharika fails to fire the Electoral Commission Chairperson Justice Jane Ansah. The group says Malawians have lost trust in her ability to manage future elections because she bungled the May 21st general election. Two opposition presidential candidates, Lazarus Chakwera from the main opposition Malawi Congress Party and former Vice President Saulos Chilima, are challenging the results in the Malawi High Court. Gift Trapens, Vice President for the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, tells viewers Peter Clotty the president must replace the Electoral Commission chair.
Malawians are aware that we had millions of people who went into the street, and the president is still silent on the matters, and that is why we called upon the president just to address the nation on the issues that Malawians are demonstrating against.
But you cannot force the president to address the nation just because you said he should address the nation. It doesn't work that way, does it?
We are not forcing the president, but in the first place, the president is there to represent Malawi. He's not there representing himself. So if there is a crisis and we have a president who is silent, as if there's nothing happening in the country, then we can question that leadership, because we have issues in Malawi, and if you have a president, the president should be concerned in terms of what is going on in the country. So you cannot pretend as if there's nothing happened in Malawi, and that's what we are saying. That's what we are calling him as a president to address the situation in the country, because it's a crisis.
Some people have accused the organization of trying to undermine the peace and stability of Malawi, and that you are even threatening to go to the borders and other places to demonstrate and cause chaos and mayhem. Is this the right tactic to use?
I think those who are accusing us, they do not follow what we have been doing. In the first place, the right to demonstrate is in our constitution, and you can see that whenever we are blocked, we go to the court, we follow the law. And also we work with the authorities in terms of making sure that we have peace, people are protected, the demonstrators are protected. So our demonstrations always have been peaceful, but also they are backed by the law, because we're going to court regardless of the government trying to block that right for Malawi to exercise the right to demonstrate.
When are you holding your next round of demonstrations? Because I heard one of the places is at the border. Why the border?
We want to shut down the airport, and also would want to shut down the airport. I think Malawians have the right to demonstrate, so they can demonstrate within the law. And that's what we are planning, because we think that Dr. Jane Ansah is not taking the issue seriously, because in other countries, Dr. Jane Ansah would have resigned a long time ago. We are yet to announce in terms of the specific date when we are going to demonstrate in the borders, but as well at the airport that we have in Malawi. We are yet to announce those dates.
But if you go ahead with such plans to shut down the airport as well as cause trouble at the borders, aren't you weakening commercial activities? Aren't you going to affect people who do genuine business to ensure Malawi's economy is boosted?
I think that question should be answered by the government, because they are aware the demand of the people. They're supposed to answer that question. If they are really serious, why should the whole country stand because of one person? Why can't that person just leave?
Gift Trapens is the vice president for the Malawi Human Rights Defenders Coalition. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from the capital, Lilongwe. Tanzania held mass burials yesterday as the death toll from the weekend fuel tanker explosion reaches 75. Authorities said the accident occurred as the driver of the tanker was trying to avoid a motorcyclist on the main road between the Morogoro region and the capital, Dar es Salaam. Bystanders then tried to take fuel that was leaking from the tanker. Dr. Stephen Kebwe is the Morogoro Region Commissioner. He says authorities used DNA to identify some of the bodies as they were burned beyond recognition.
In total, 134 persons were involved in this serious accident. 62 of them died on spot because of the fire. These are the bodies they discovered. Some of them were burnt to the level of the ash of it all. And we took 72 of them to the hospital for care. And because of the center cannot afford to take all the 68 patients who were critically ill, we decided to refer them through the ambulance. Some of them were airlifted to our national hospital in Dar es Salaam. There were 46 of them. Three of them unfortunately died yesterday, and today in the afternoon for the died, making the total number of patients die 75. So right now, the critical patients we have 39 in the National Hospital and 16 at the Morogoro Regional Hospital. So that is the status.
Dr. Kabwe, the medical facilities in Morogoro, do you think you are equipped enough to deal with the number of casualties and the injuries?
Yeah, the ones we have right now in the hospital, 16 of them, they are progressing very well. We can really manage. We decided to refer some of them to Omwendil because of the facilities. Like the monitors, we don't have the facilities, the bedside.
Were you able to identify those who died? Because we understand that the extent of the burns was so much. So how were you able to identify?
What we did, we had to take the samples. Because if we couldn't have been able to bury the bodies, the decomposition could have been at a very bad status. So we had to bury, but after taking the samples from the bodies. And we have advertised people are coming to the samples through the missing individuals. And the reality is, we are continuing taking the samples so that after a week you can complete the exercise. They really match the DNA of the control samples from the relatives and also the primary sample from the dead bodies.
Dr. Stephen Kebwe is the Morogoro Region Health Commissioner. He was speaking with us from Morogoro, Tanzania. Activists in South Sudan say they want the government to increase the number of women in leadership, both in public and private sectors. They have launched a campaign dubbed Born to Lead to push for more women participation. Winnie Sirino reports from Juba.
Campaign organizers kicked off the campaign by showing a documentary that featured female chief, teacher, Boda Boda driver, midwife, and farmer across all of South Sudan states. Rhea Williams, head of the local NGO Crown the Woman, says some people claim South Sudan does not have enough capable women ready to lead, which she says it flat out wrong. She says the campaign will highlight the achievements of women to change people's attitudes while inspiring South Sudanese boys, girls, men and women to support women and girls who want to reach their highest potential.
Born to Lead is basically a campaign to remind South Sudan and the rest of the world that South Sudanese women's place is not in the kitchen, but other leadership positions. And this inspiration comes from women being deliberately excluded from leadership because they are women.
Williams accuses media outlets in several countries of typically reporting negative stories about South Sudanese women as victims of rape and survivors of early child marriages, but rarely reporting on the achievements of women. She says this campaign will change that.
A lot of women women are doing a lot of amazing initiatives, like businesses, like running organizations, but most of these women do not get funding or they do not get support. So I call upon donors out there to ensure that they support women, especially women at the grassroots. The other thing I think that could change is starting to invest in boys, ensuring that boys and men are involved. They're taught to change the perceptions, to look at their sisters and girls as their equals.
Juba community worker Salome Lokorito says there are not many women in leadership positions because society perceives women as people who are not fit to lead.
We've been cultured to know that women cannot lead and women cannot hold leadership positions. And even at schools, when we come to the girls, most of the time they'll be told, you cannot become the president, you cannot become the head prefect, you can just become the secretary or just the deputy. But we need to deal with that and see how we can overcome this backward culture.
Margaret Tabu, a youth leader with United World Colleges, says the societal norms in South Sudan are that men are to lead, which causes women to show little interest in becoming leaders themselves. She says the change must start at home with parents when children are young.
When we raise our children in a way that will channel them into looking at leadership as a role that can be performed by both the boy or the girl or the man or the woman, that you're building the confidence of the child right from that stage.
Williams says ending child marriages and preventing gender-based violence would go a long way toward changing attitudes about women. She is calling on leaders of all political parties to ensure that 35% of South Sudan's leadership positions go to women as spelled out in the signed revitalized peace deal. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 13th. Let's send shout out to listeners on all our VOA affiliate stations around Africa. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. Nigeria's Shiite Muslims have suspended their two-year-long protest now that their ailing leader, Ibrahim Zazaki, was airlifted on Monday for treatment in India. Zazaki, the founder and leader of the Islamic Movement of Nigeria, was arrested in 2015 and charged with leading a mob that attempted to kill an army officer in Kaduna. The Shiites have denied the allegation, saying they are a peaceful group. Ibrahim Gamawa, spokesperson for the Islamic Movement of Nigeria, says the group is delighted, although the medical trip should have been granted long ago.
We are so delighted that it has been done at last. We have been agitating for this for the past 2 years, but it was not granted. But at the end of the day, it has been granted, so we are delighted. So we are grateful to many Nigerians who sympathize with us during our turbulent times, and at the same time, the international community that have been agitating for this for quite a long time, and human rights activists in and out of the country.
I know you have been engaged in protests calling for his release. Does this mean that you will now cease your protests?
Yeah, definitely. The release free availability protests that have been going on in Abuja for the first 1 year, 8 months will stop, definitely. But our other activities that we are known for 40 years will continue whenever the opportunity comes or the date comes. We are compelled to move to Abuja to go on daily protests. But since we have gotten what we want, so far so good, so we will disappear from the streets of Abuja for the time being. We pray that our sheikh will come back healthier than he left the country.
You know that successive Nigerian governments, including even the government of President Muhammadu Buhari, have accused your group of being overtaken by extremists. What do you make of that?
We have only one leader, who is Sheikh Ibrahim Yaqub Al-Zerbiti. So it has never been taken by extremists. We are far away from extremism. We want to unite Nigerians. We want Nigerians to understand each other. We want Nigerians to tolerate each other. We want Nigerians to be like each other's keeper. So extremism is for the extremists. Those that are kidnapping, those that are killing, those that are destroying villages, we are not known for that. There is no single court in this country that convicted any of our members of either killing of any other person. We are victims of all these things that some disgruntled people. So we are victims of extremism. We are victims of political thuggery. We are the endangered species in Nigeria. We are victims of almost every crime, you know, including official ones. So we are far away from extremism. Our leader is executive, and we remain our leader. We pay our allegiance to him, and we continue to follow him. And he even acts. When he was with us, he created the Christian wing of the Islamic movement. So who are we going to terrorize? We are not terrorizing. It is the leaders of this country who are known for corruption, bribery, and the rest that are seeing the movement of Sheikh as a threat.
Ibrahim Gamawa is the spokesman for the Islamic Movement of Nigeria. He was speaking with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In Guinea, the leader of the Liberal Bloc Party, Fayyami Limuno, who was jailed since August 2nd for slandering Justice Minister Mohamed Lamin Fofana, was released last Friday. Milimuno had accused the Justice Minister of having been the spokesperson of a rebel group who attacked Guinea in 2002. He apologized for the misidentification, but the Justice Minister sued him for defamation. He is scheduled to appear in court today, Tuesday. Milimuno says he hopes the Justice Minister will drop the charges so that the whole country can focus on finding the real rebel spokesperson, Mohamed Lamin Fofana.
I am happy that, I am free at this time, even though the process has not ended yet. And with my lawyers, we're working to see how we're going to go forward in the process. I mean, the process is not going to end just because the complaint is withdrawn. The process is going to end when justice is made for all those victims in 2000 and 2001 during the attacks.
So you are supposed to go back to court on Tuesday. Why?
I'm going to court Tuesday to know what is going to be the next step and to know also if the Minister of Justice has withdrawn his complaint. If he does, then the case is going to be just how to find the real Mohamed Lamin Fofana, who's going to be prosecuted. As a Minister of Justice, he has to work with us to find who is the real Mohamed Lamin Fofana, because that is his main role, his mission is to make sure that if something happened to a Guinean, justice is made.
I spoke to one of your representatives, and he said that you did apologize.
Yes, I did. You know that Guinea was attacked by rebels from Sierra Leone and Liberia in 2000. The guy who was the spokesperson of those rebels, his name is Mohamed Lamin Fofana. The thing is, I am not the only person or the first person to do a mistake. His name is Mohamed Lamin Fofana. Now he calls himself Mamadou, which is completely different. And when I was talking about Mohamed Lamin Fofana, I was talking about him as he was a guy named Mohamed Lamin Fofana, who was the spokesperson for the rebels. So we did apologize. But to the question, to know who is Mohamed Lamin Fofana.
Do you believe now that the Justice Minister, Mr. Fofana, is not the speaker of the rebels who attacked Guinea in 2002?
Yes, I do. I do believe that given the witnesses who have given us the information that Mr. Mohamed Fofana is not the current Minister of Justice, that's why as a political party and myself, we made the statement to apologize. But what I'm going to say is this. The question remains, because my communication was about how to make justice for those victims in 2000-2001 during the attacks. So the question is there. And I think as the current Minister of Justice is going to be involved to help find Mohamed Lamin Fofana, because when we find Mohamed Lamin Fofana, he's the one who's going to tell us the people Guinea with. That's the most important question here.
Fayyami Limuno is the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. Tensions are high in Guinea as speculations mount that President Alpha Conde will change the constitution and run for a third term. Groups opposing this are facing stiffer laws that may lead to more violence by security forces. Jim Warmington, West Africa researcher at Human Rights Watch, spoke to Ricky Shryak about the current political climate in Conakry.
Position of standoff where everybody thinks, and there's the government itself, except for Conde, has said that there will be a new constitution, and really people are waiting to see if Conde says something publicly before there'll be a really tense round of public demonstrations and likely, unfortunately, violence between both supporters of Conde and supporters of the opposition and between the security forces and protesters. So it's a really tense time, and no one really knows quite when the current tension is going to boil over.
So in that context, this new law that was passed recently by the National Assembly that concerns the use of firearms by security forces, is that worrisome in the fact that if there are these protests, the security forces have license to be more violent with protesters?
I think we're seeing several things that are an effort by the government to crack down on freedoms to express dissent and opposition ahead of this potential constitutional referendum. One of those things is just a general and not explicit but effective ban on demonstrations. And then if people do try and organize, the instigators are arrested or detained and on the day of the demonstration. And so the law that you're referring to that was an effort to make clear in law the rights of the gendarmerie to use firearms was seen, because of the political context, as an effort to dissuade demonstrators from protesting. I think in reality, that actual law was a bit more of a complicated situation than that, because I think it was probably initially conceived of in the context of terror and the risks that the West Africa region faces generally for terror, and an effort to give a clearer justification to the gendarmerie as to when they could use force, for example, in the context of anti-terror. But clearly, given the moment that Guinea is in, absolutely rightly, human rights groups, including Human Rights Watch, who I work for, and other groups, made pretty quickly clear that any law that gives gendarmes more discretion to use firearms is an extremely risky and ill-advised thing to do. And so that law, though, is a slightly more complicated situation than it was often portrayed as, is just one example of efforts by the government or things that look like efforts by the government to suppress dissent during this tense time.
And I think a worrying thing, given Guinea's history of this, is, you know, the stadium massacre of 2009. Justice has not been given to the victims of that massacre, which it was a decade ago now.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think the law itself, it's not a good law. It's too vague. It doesn't describe enough the situations in which gendarmes can use force. But I think we should focus on the big picture. And the big picture is there is very likely to be a political confrontation that involves protests. And protests in Guinea are often violent both from the protesters and from the security forces in responding. And if you look at the long-term effort to improve the conduct of the security forces, some of which have been good, but one thing that hasn't happened in Guinea is that there hasn't been any track record of holding members of the security forces to account.
That was Jim Warmington, West Africa researcher at Human Rights Watch. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Guinea's capital, Conakry. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. 2 out of 4 experimental drugs being used to treat Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo have proven so effective that they will be given to all patients. The success of the 2 drugs prompted scientists to halt the study and prioritize their use in the DRC, where a year-long outbreak has killed more than 1,800 people. The drugs have been a part of the study since November. Malawi Human Rights Defender Coalition have threatened to shut down the country's only international airport and borders if President Arthur Peter Mutharika fails to fire the Electoral Commission Chief Justice Jane Ansah. And that's it for this Tuesday, August 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music, and Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.